Hey everyone, it's Brian with the Wabash Valley Power Economic Development Podcast. Today we're talking to Brandon Knoll, who is the Senior Business Development Director for the Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership, and Matt Saltanovitz, who's the Vice President of Domestic Business Expansions for the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. They're going to take us through a little bit of their process, how they work together, how they work on behalf of their communities, and essentially what they are thinking about when they're looking at bringing and growing business to the state of Indiana. It's a really good conversation. It kind of pulls back the veil a little bit on how economic developers think and what we do and really what our motivation is when we're working to land a company or grow a company inside of a territory. So this is a great discussion. Hope you guys enjoy it. All right, Brandon and Matt, thank you guys for joining us today. Brandon, why don't you start us off and tell us a little bit about who you work for and what you do and a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so my name is Brandon Knoll. I'm the Senior Director of Business Development with the Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership. We are an 11-county organization. We serve the local economic developers of the 11 counties of Northeast Indiana. Our team in particular at the partnership focuses on business attraction, so bringing new business and new business investment to our region. Most of what we do is externally focused to Northeast Indiana. I'm born, raised, and educated in Northeast Indiana, and so I'm really just a glorified salesperson, kind of an evangelist going out talking about the opportunities and advantages our region offers, as well as our state.
What did you do before you worked for the partnership?
I went to school doing business, finance, and economics. That was my major. I played in the world of finance for five-ish years and then helped a technology company start a sales and marketing division for them before I moved over into the world of economic development, which is its own beast. It is completely different from the private sector in its own unique and fun way.
Awesome. Well, Matt, same question for you. Give us a little bit of your background, your role, who you work for, kind of what you do day to day.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity, Brian. So yeah, I'm Matt Saltanovitz. I am the Vice President of Domestic Expansions for the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. The IEDC is essentially serves as the state's Department of Commerce, and we work with all our regional local partners as well as utilities to bring in projects to the state and help business retention and expansion projects as well. I have served in this role for roughly a month now. It's a new role for me, focusing more on lead generation with a little bit of project management. Before that, my role was focusing on attractions into the state. So very, very similar role, but more project management focused there. I was doing project management for Northern Indiana. And then for roughly 5 or 6 years, I was the director of the Northwest Indiana regional office of the IEDC. We've kind of gone away from the regional offices, but I'm still located in Northwest Indiana, though I do work primarily for the entire state now.
And you also worked at the regional level before coming to the state. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, and I did come up through Northwest Indiana through the regional economic development organization there, kind of the counterpart of Brandon's organization called the Northwest Indiana Forum. I spent 2 years there as the director of economic development, doing very similar role to Brandon, but definitely not as well as he's doing it now, going out and talking to companies and trying to bring them into Indiana and hopefully within the 7-county Northwest Indiana area.
Awesome. So, Brandon, I'll turn back to you and I'll ask you guys both this question. So, Matt, you'll get the advantage of noodling out a little bit longer. But, take me through your day. Take me through your just kind of an average day from, when you first start working, getting into the office, kind of through the end of it, of how you interact with maybe some of the folks in your region, outside of your region, prospects, site selectors. Talk to me about it.
Well, each day is uniquely different. I'm currently in a hotel in Atlanta. So basically probably 2 weeks a month for a couple days in those weeks, I'm on the road somewhere. I was in San Diego last week. I'll be in Dallas coming up. So that's part of it. I'm traveling. There's an external component where I'm on the road. When I'm in the office, it's a lot of meetings with internal folks, both to our organization and our region, because we're 85-90% privately funded. So you have some of those conversations. It's also meeting with the 11 counties and the Lidos and what's going on in their communities. It's meeting with our utility partners and what are they seeing? What are they knowing? And so my day, when I'm on the road, it's meetings, conferences. I'm trying to slam my schedule when I'm on the road because I have a wife and kid at home. So I want to make sure that my time is spent appropriately on the road. And then when I'm inside the office, again, it's project work. It's following up on leads and meetings. You know, my day starts pretty early. It's a lot of emails. It's a traditional, we've taken this private sector sales strategy and really brought it into economic development from a regional level. So it's prospecting, it's lead generation, it's working things through the funnel, trying to get as many projects as we can or opportunities for our region to take swings at bringing in new business. So that's a long-winded way of saying my day is different all of the time. A lot of meetings. Matt's going to have a very similar, I would assume, a very similar story to tell.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, to follow up a little bit, so, you know, in the way you and I often interact, it seems like it's from when you have maybe generated a prospect or generated a lead, and it can be all the way through, you know, you're working with the company or the site selector on just making sure that that lead turns into an actual project. So what percentage of your time, I guess, would be spent on the lead generation versus just making sure that turns into a landed company, I guess?
I would say 70% of my time is prospecting, lead generation, and then probably, so 70% there, 20% project management, you know, because our team is tasked with really getting it to a project phase, and then we kind of have a handoff to the IEDC and the local economic developers and the utility partners, and then you're kind of just CC'd on emails to make sure that things don't fall through the cracks and things are moving forward. And then that last 10% again is probably internal meetings again with local economic developers, utility partners within the region. Each project, so if you're working with a consultant, it's a different tactic you have to use. If it's a company, there's a different tactic you have to use. And really each prospect, each lead, each project is different. And so each of them require a different amount of your involvement, a different amount of what the utility is involved, the state's involved, the local is involved. So yeah, I think on the front end, that's probably how I would break it down, 70% okay. Prospect lead generation.
Awesome. Well, Matt, I mean, I'll start with you kind of the same way. You know, from your state perspective, I realize you're in a little bit different role, but I mean, on the lead generation side, what is your day looking like right now? And maybe how has that evolved over time that you've been with the state?
Yeah. So thanks. A lot like Brandon, every day is going to be different. You know, I would say previously, up till recently, a lot of my time was spent doing project management. So I would say the opposite of what Brandon said. Maybe it was like 20 or 30% at most was lead generation, maybe even less. Maybe it was like probably 10 or 20% was lead generation. The rest, 80% was, the bulk of it was project management, making sure, you know, when a prospect is interested in an area that they have, you know, the appropriate sites that they want to see, and, you know, either working with our site selection team or with the regional group or the local groups there involved, and then bringing everyone, making sure everyone's at the table. You know, a lot of project management is just making sure everyone's there. Obviously, there's a part to play with the state incentive role, but you want to make sure your local partners, your regional partners are there, the utility partners are there as well, because we all bring a different layer of not only just an investment and incentive, but, you know, assistance that we can provide and resources in general. And then, you know, of course, on the state side of things, there is always going to be the connections, of course, with, you know, some of our partners at like IDEM or NDOT and the permitting process, which we found more and more to be an integral part of these new projects. Recently, now in the past month, though, a lot of my time is being spent more like Brandon's. Well, I'm not quite yet on the road like a road warrior like him. I think I'm going to be fairly certain soon, as I'm, you know, scheduling out the rest of my year and the beginning of next. So we're getting there, going to, you know, some of these conferences where consultants and site selectors are, or more the brokers and developers as well, or some of these companies, just trying to get the word out about Indiana in general. So I would say, you know, mostly 75% of my time right now is lead generation now, you know, taking meetings virtually, if not in person, if I'm not on the road, and just like an entry point to Indiana. If someone's interested, you know, we get these leads from many places. You know, they could come in from, you know, of course, you know, Artility and local and regional partners as well. But, you know, sometimes people just come directly to the state. We also do have a few lead generation contracting, third-party contractors that we work with that have, we're trying to determine if that's a good avenue as well. So far, they brought us a lot of leads. It's very new, so we're not sure quite yet how well these leads are going to develop into projects, but that right now it's looking good. And then we're part of my new role is we're expanding our presence across the country. Much like we have, IDC has numerous international offices. We've just opened up a Chicago office and we're looking to open up some other offices on the coast as well as in the South. Don't have a timeline for you yet, but I'll be managing those offices. So I suspect a lot more of my time will be based on getting leads for Indiana and seeing where they best fit. And less of my time will be spent on projects. Right now, I'm still probably, I did say 70% leads, but it's probably 50-50 right now as I transition out of being solely a project manager. Management's always been my role for the past, say, 5 or 6 years at the IDC. So it's in my blood. And I thought when I first took this role, like, well, can I do projects too? But I'm slowly learning maybe that's not the best use of my time. And maybe right. There's not enough time in the day to do both lead generation and coordinate that for the state, as well as manage a project all the way to the end.
Well, and you touched on something. So, I mean, listeners out there, I mean, I think from an economic developer standpoint, the lion's share of just lead volume is coming through the state of Indiana, through the IEDC. And I guess, you know, you touched on that a little bit, that people are reaching out sort of proactively to you. But how are you guys getting, you know, your leads? I mean, you mentioned people reaching out, you mentioned these sort of satellite offices, but maybe can you talk about the different ways that a lead actually even gets originated from the state level?
Yeah, and short answer, it comes from everywhere, you know, and I'll kind of build on my time as a regional director and work my way up to the state. So, you know, I was directing Northwest Indiana. It would come in from brokers. It would come in from the local economic development team, you know, the Leados. It would come in from the regional economic development team, like someone like Brandon. It would come in from the company itself. These are, you know, maybe even a business connection, like, oh, I know this guy and knows looking in Valparaiso or whatever for a facility. It's very similar, just on a larger scale on the state, you know, on the statewide lead generation role. They come in from everywhere. You know, companies will find us. We'll go out and look for companies. Consultants will come to us just because the first place you go, I think, as a consultant is like, well, I want to be somewhere in the state, and maybe they've narrowed down a region, maybe they haven't, but they usually start with the state. Brandon notwithstanding, I think he's doing an excellent job of reaching out to the consultants and showing that Northeast Indiana has a great business climate and lots of opportunities there. So that's awesome job what you're doing, Brandon. But yeah, there's also those, you know, we have the international offices, we have the domestic offices, and we just have other opportunities we see. You know, we partner with utilities with the IPP trips, Indiana Power Partnership trips to, you know, different parts of the state to have a conversation with consultants and companies about Indiana. We go to events like Select USA, you know, and have multiple presence, not just with our domestic team, but our international team, of course, where I was not there this year, but I believe we had a booth, and we've had just in the past week about two or three follow-ups from that event in June, just of companies that had a conversation with our team there and wanted to learn more and just take that even further. And we've had I mentioned the third-party contractors. They've done pretty well as far as bringing us leads. One of them recently just had, we'll call it a EV or battery sector focus. So they reached out, and we've had a couple of really good conversations over the past few weeks with those types of companies. With all of the EV battery news across the country and, you know, even more recently within the state, there's a lot of those projects happening right now, which is great to see, because it's good to see that industry that's rooted in the manufacturing that Indiana is known for, but is one of the economies of the future, really taking hold. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes within the next few years.
So, Brandon, I mean, I know I know a little bit about your process and I want you to kind of take us through that, but I want to go back to like summer of 2020. I think you guys have like economic development cabin fever. And I remember, you know, we get together and we're on a call together and you guys are kind of like, we got to get out. And what you guys did, I think, was pretty remarkable, because while, you know, I think the rest of the economic development world was very much either on Zoom calls or completely locked down, you did something that I think was a little bit novel for the time. But I want to hear also like what that did for the organization. So just take me back to where you guys, I want to say like end of summer 2020 and where you guys went from there, and then how that has kind of changed your organization or changed the lead flow for your organization.
Yeah. So, you know, a lion's share of our projects that we issue out to the 11 counties, we're hunting and gathering. So there's proactive phone calls, emails, conversations happening ahead of trade shows and conferences. We focus heavily on site consultants and brokers. And so a lot, just understand a lot of what we do, again, is attracting business to Northeast Indiana. COVID happened and we quickly had to figure out, okay, if we go at the beginning of COVID, hey, we're not going to be on the road, how can we still deliver for the region? Because we weren't going to just sit back and wait. We had to continue to move forward. And so we set up a bunch of Zoom calls on the front end of COVID with site consultants. Site consultants are really hard to get in front of because they're super busy. They're on the road a lot. They're in and out of meetings, and kind of the last people they want to chat with are local economic developers or regional folks or state folks. They're all home. Everyone's grounded. So we had a lot of conversations via Zoom on the front end of COVID. The summer of 2020 rolls around. During those conversations with consultants, we thought, hey, you know, if we were to come to your area and we were to go into a restaurant and we were to get the private room of the restaurant, would you attend? And all of them but one said that they would attend if we were to do that. And so we went to our leadership team and said, hey, we need to do this appropriately because we don't want to look like we're not taking COVID serious. We also want to do it in a very safe manner. And we worked with restaurants, again, got private rooms fully spread out. We capped the number of consultants that could come to these lunches or dinners at 6 people. And so everyone was going to be well without 6 feet apart. And we went to Atlanta and Dallas and a couple other cities in 2020, the back end of 2020, and got on the road. And it became wildly successful for us. It was a moment where people would ask for your business card, one, because they would have to go home and show their significant other, like, no, I seriously had a business meeting during COVID. Here's the business card of the gentleman who came down. But it made a memorable visit. We're known as the company that came down during COVID. Trust me, I don't take it lightly. I mean, it was a risk because COVID is very serious and traveling was frowned upon by some people. But we looked at it as, here's an opportunity for our region to get in front of people that normally it's hard to get in front of. It became wildly successful for us. It's a plan and program that we have implemented year over year now, where we go to these major metros and do lunches and dinners with consultants. And that's not a novel thing. I mean, there's a lot of regional and state groups that do that, but it kind of set the standard for how we'll do things going forward. And we saw it as an opportunity. It's paid off for us. We have a number of projects and tight relationships with these consultants and brokers because of our time that we spent on the road in the back half of 2020.
You know, I think one of the things that was unique in that approach is, one, just getting back out on the road was kind of unheard of, just given where we were as a country at that point in time. But when we would talk with the site selectors, they would say, you physically cannot get into our building. Even if I wanted to host a meeting in our office, the building owner or the company policy was, we will not actually allow outside people into our place. So, you know, I think you supported local restaurants that way. I mean, that was probably a nice upshot to that. But getting people out, there was probably some questions about whether people even wanted to do that. And I think you uncovered that there was a real pent up demand to just get back to face and see these folks. And I guess, you know, I've seen firsthand the benefits of that, but I've also heard kind of secondhand without you in the room, people saying, man, and Northeast Indiana was the only group that was willing to come out and visit us. And I think that made a real mark. And so, you know, big kudos to you. You know, and I think that's maybe a good place to start with this next question. I'll keep it with you, Brandon. But, you know, take me through how you go from just making that introduction or making that relationship, and then it turns into a lead, and maybe how you respond to that, and then how it actually goes through the process of becoming a project that lands in your territory.
I mean, one of the values, core values that we focus on from a Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership team and really our business development team holds tight to is exceeding expectations and fighting to win. Like the results that we want to win. And for us, a win is getting that project issued. So on the front end, when you're talking with consultants, so you're trying to give them all the information that they need proactively. We have 800,000 people in Northeast Indiana, and we want them to know all of the things that we're doing proactively. So if a project comes across their desk, they might think, hey, let's call Northeast Indiana. We know Brandon, Austin, Chad, Stefan, insert some member of our team. So let's call them. So that's the first thing. You got to have these relationships. The site consultant broker side of things is heavy relationship driven. We send them emails. I'm texting, calling. We just stay top of mind with them. As far as the proactive prospecting to client or to individual companies, a lot of it is just trying to get name recognition, them understanding who Northeast Indiana is, that the state of Indiana isn't a flyover state. It is actually a state that you should come to. We've found that if we try and sell, hey, you need to be in the Midwest, well, really, you're going to look kind of Indiana and Ohio. And then if you're going to look in Indiana, we want you to look at Northeast Indiana. Give us the first crack at it. If we can't deliver, the state of Indiana is right there to deliver for you because it's an advantageous place for you to be in. So for us, we're having those conversations early on. We fill out what we have as like an RP alert form to figure out, hey, are you looking for a site or building? What's the CapEx, jobs, average wage, utility demand? And then depending upon, you know, the answers to those questions, we'll get it out to the 11 counties. We'll try and make sure that the utility partners are involved in those conversations. If it's a big power user, at the appropriate time, have the state come in on those conversations. Really, you're trying quarterback when you get it issued out and you get back the sites and buildings that the company or consultant are needing. You're really delivering that back to them in a timely manner. We try and, again, exceed expectations. We put together a really nice proposal. We have a data analyst in-house now, and so he's able to run metro comparisons. We're trying to answer all of the questions they could have proactively so they don't have to come back and say, hey, can you do X, Y, and Z? We're trying to give that to them on the front end. So knowing your audience, knowing what sales points are really important to either the company or consultant is valuable for us. So we're trying to exceed expectations. And then once we get a site or a building that's in play in our region, that's when we start bringing in, you know, we work hard with the local economic developer and supporting them on state and utilities and what private sector folks do we need to have in on these conversations? What colleges and universities can come in and talk about the programs that they're providing that may supplement what this company is looking for? I mean, we really try, and I know I've said this much, we try and exceed expectations. We try and show them the very collaborative nature our region and state go about business and try and make sure that they know that we want to win their business. We want them in our community because this isn't like a year over year decision. I mean, this is a decades long decision. It has to be mutually beneficial to both the company, the state, the region, the locality, the utility provider. Everybody's got to be on board with that company coming into their community. And we take that very seriously. It's not just plug and play that's trying to bring in every company. I think what I've learned coming from the private sector into economic development is you have to score these projects that come in to understand there's only so much land, there's only so many buildings, there's only so many people, and you want the best things for your community. And so that's where we work really, really close with our economic developers and the state of Indiana and make sure that we're providing the opportunity. But ultimately, they have to decide, yeah, we want this in our community or we don't. And we have to be as a regional group okay with that? And we are, because we get, there's a lot of internal things that happen at the local level and even at the state level. Politics, the employers that are there, are they going to be upset that you brought in a project that has 500 jobs and they're saying, wait a sec, we have unemployment under 3% right now. What are we doing? So there's a lot of things at play when it comes to economic development that I don't think people in the private sector recognize until you get into the industry.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I think a lot of times we can be driven by just create, new. And you'll get a lot of resistance from your existing employers that now see a competitor for people that they have, but also the people that they're trying to hire. So it does create an interesting dynamic, especially, you know, I think as you get closer and closer to the local level, you have to be able to, as you said, and Matt was nodding vigorously when you said this, score these projects to say, you know, is this going to be a value add to our community, or is this potentially going to cause more friction and more issues? So Matt, you know, I probably to some degree, the state's process for a lead kind of coming in and then bringing in strategic partners and things like that is going to be similar, but also in some ways maybe different. So maybe you can focus on how your process from the state perspective differs from that of maybe more of a regional group.
Yeah, happy to explain a little further. You're right. A lot of what Brandon said is going to be applicable to how we do it, just maybe said in a different way. You know, when we start with, we'll say with the leads, oftentimes my conversation is their first touch point, and Brandon probably has the same conversations. It's the first touch point with a company that it's their first time even hearing about Indiana. So we start with the very high level about, you know, talking about the advantages we have, the business climate, the business case for Indiana. And usually that does start, as Brandon said, with just kind of the advantages of the Midwest and where we place within the that ecosystem, you know, our business climate that our General Assembly and previous administrations and current administrations have built. From that, we bring in, as my boss likes to say, a concierge approach. So we want to not necessarily hold the business's hand while they're looking to come in, but make sure they know where they're going. We work with them and have a very similar site selection intake form or project intake form that Brandon kind of mentioned on his, you know, getting the project scope, getting the metrics, finding out where they want to be. Is this a statewide search? Is this a regional search? Is this a specific county or community search? Do they already have a building or site in mind? Sometimes, you know, that can be a good and bad things. It makes things easier on the front end. But what happens if that community doesn't, you know, is not receptive? Or what happens if that site or building doesn't work out? Then what's your backup plan? So a lot of variables in play there. You know, once you've identified where a company is looking, the next step is bringing in the appropriate players. You know, of course, obviously connecting them to the local and regional team there, as well as the utility in play. I mentioned permitting, but also the utility requirements are the, you know, speed to market is almost the new incentive sometimes, especially with these mega projects. The, you know, the faster we can get permitting done and the faster within a reasonable time frame the utilities can come to the site, maybe the easier it is for this decision to be made. Concurrently, we're having these conversations about incentives with the company. We layer incentives in Indiana with the state coming in basic, mostly with jobs and payroll, the local community coming in mostly with the investment, and the utility coming in obviously with the electric usage there. So those conversations are happening there. But Brandon brought up a really good point, and you're right, I was nodding vigorously about looking at the project and is this something we want? And that's something that I think we've focused on a lot better in the past year or so when Secretary of Commerce Brad Chambers came in and, you know, really looked at what we're doing. And we've decided, especially with the unemployment rate being so low, not only across the state and in certain areas of the state, but across the country, we are scoring every deal, you know, on very different metrics. So there's qualitative and quantitative metrics, of course. You're going to want the 500 job, $2 billion project, but is it the right fit for the community? on the face of it, those are going to be the quantitative metrics there are going to score high. But it is it a dirty project? Is it, you know, heavy industrial that no community is going to want? Then maybe the qualitative metrics score a little lower. We take a very close look at the wages now. And that's something we've zeroed in on. We look at how the average wage of a project compares both locally at the county level and then regionally and then within the state and within the nation. There's no secret that Indiana is not where we need to be on the national average wage scale. So that's those three metrics drive where we can be within our metrics for an incentive as well and how badly we go after a project. At the end of the day, it's a holistic view of things and it's a collaborative process with all of our partners. So we can't get anything done if the utility and the local community is not on board. And this is where I'll remind anyone, all the listeners, that we don't give out incentives to a project if the local community is not on board. We specifically need their approval and support of a project before we can move forward with our incentives.
Well, that's a great point, because that was something that I think I picked out of both of your answers to this question, is the fact that, you know, at some point, as you guys are creating these leads, there's a process by which you have to hand it off to a local partner, fulfill at least their side of the project or the incentive or whatever it may be. And I guess my question, and I'll start with you, Brandon, is, you know, what are some of the challenges that you see some of the local economic developers that they face kind of in their day-to-day jobs and being able to successfully implement some of these projects or successfully land them?
I will go on record. I do not ever want to be a local economic developer because their day is wild. I mean, they're putting out so many fires. They're trying to keep all of their companies happy. You know, they're trying to focus on business retention and expansion while also business attraction. They're getting leads from the state. They're getting leads from the regional group. They may have a broker who has put up a spec building in their community and the broker just wants to get that building filled. And the economic developer is trying to say, well, we need the right project to go in there. And so they have a difficult, I believe a very difficult job, not one that I want to take on. And so I think all of that stuff, especially in Indiana, and at least in Northeast Indiana, you have very low unemployment. You have manufacturers, which is, you know, our bread and butter. Advanced manufacturing, advanced materials is what we're known for in our region, who are booming and expanding and doing great. And they have a ton of job openings. Housing is a huge issue in Northeast Indiana, and I think across the state and the nation. And so they're focused on, you know, housing projects, quality of place. You know, how do I keep people here? How do I keep the high school kids in the trades program that then they stay in our communities? I mean, they're just trying to juggle a bunch of different balls in the air. And then you have a regional group that's saying, you know, we're outpounding pavement. You have a state that's pulling in a bunch of leads and we're saying, well, here you go. Here's more opportunities. You know, where are you going to put them? Where can we put them? Where can we put them? And I think it becomes overwhelming. And I can only speak on behalf of the 11 counties that we serve, but they all do a great job at trying to balance all of that and add in the political component. You have new mayors that come in. You have new commissioners that come in. You know, there's kind of this ever-changing political climate within each of their communities. And so they have to deal with a lot of different things. So that's probably a long-winded way of saying, like, I would not want to be in their shoes. So I empathize with them often.
I think that's a really good way to encapsulate that. Seen and unseen, there's a lot of different challenges to these projects, political and structural, and there's a level of unrelenting lead activity. And I'll turn it to you, Matt, because you guys are the source of a lot of that. No time to rest, because more than likely there's another lead on its way. You know, from your perspective, and I think you've worked with locals at varying stages of your career, but where do you see some of those challenges, especially here as of lately, with the locals basically being able to fulfill all of these project requirements?
Yeah, I am again going to echo what Brandon said. When I was younger, I thought maybe within my career path that, you know, being a local economic development official, Aledo, might be something I'd want to do. Right now, I'm not sure about that, but that just kind of stresses the importance of what they do in a community. And I think a lot of people don't see anything other than the ribbon cutting, and there's a lot that goes into it. I think key right now, other than, of course, there's the projects that we leads we send statewide or to a specific region. In my mind, I would hope those are kind of the short-term fire is not the best word to put it, but you know, it's something that needs to take your attention and the challenge of managing your day-to-day and strategic goals. And then all of a sudden, someone from my team gives this five-page request for information, an RFI that's due on Monday and it's Thursday, and they're interested specifically in your community. You have to drop everything and put that together. But on top of that, like long term, I think a lot of the challenges that Lido's face in the local community is right now, it's workforce and quality of life. Obviously, availability of sites and buildings is going to be what puts you in contention to begin with. But after that, what makes your community different than another community? What can you show a company outside of the sites and incentives that every community is going to have? Almost every community in Indiana has the same tools to work with, just different ways that they manage it. But what is different about your community as far as workforce? Where are you going to source that? And what quality workforce is going to be? What skills do they have? That used to be question, we'll say, you know, three or four for a company. Now it's like question one or 1A. And then what's the quality of life? What can my employees do here? What can my management team do here? What's going to draw workers to this community that I can employ as a company? That's what I'm asking. You know, the state sees those challenges with workforce and quality of life. You know, I'll plug in the $500 million Ready grant program, the statewide regional economic accelerator development initiative. I believe is the acronym. Basically, money given towards quality of life projects. My understanding is these 800 projects across 92 counties. It's going to be a public-private match, I guess, is what we're trying to look at, and hopefully bring some of these communities some of the quality of life and infrastructure that they need to set themselves apart from other areas, not only of the state, but other areas of the country that may get a little more attention than we do.
Yeah, that's really well put. And I think the Ready program is one. I think it kind of actually adds to one more thing that the locals have had to manage, because there's definitely an inclusive process at the local level with great benefit. But you look at some of these organizations, they're just one or two people. And now you've got existing companies, you've got board members, politicians, grant programs that you might not have the capacity to deal with, but you know, you can't say no to free money. I'm using air quotes here, but there's just a lot of things there. So I think you guys both did a great job of sort of encapsulating some of the pressures on the local economic development folks. Before we wrap up here, one of the things that me coming from the utility perspective has maybe been a little bit unique is that more than ever, I feel that the utilities are being engaged, sometimes before even you folks are involved in these projects. And I'll start with you, Brandon, but how has your engagement with the utilities, or what has your engagement been with the utilities in serving these projects? And how, I think, has a utility been helpful, and maybe even to a certain degree, you know, what are some of the constraints that utilities could sometimes put on the availability or ability to serve a project?
So we have a slide in a slide deck when we're talking, you know, to our stakeholders about the complexity of economic development, bringing in a project, winning a project. And it is, the spider web is wildly complex. I'm a regional guy. We have a state guy. We have a utility guy. You have politicians. You have just so many people involved. To answer the first part of the question, our involvement with the utility providers, one, we have representatives of all of our big utility providers in Northeast Indiana, and we keep very close contact with them. And Brian, you and I chat often, chat with NIPSCO, AEP, Duke Energy, anyone who serves in Northeast Indiana, we stay in front of them, communicating with them. They know our annual plan. We just rolled out our three-year strat plan. They were involved in those conversations. So for us, it's a partnership. It's another person in the web that we need to make sure that they understand what we're doing, we understand what they're doing, and where they can help us and we can help them. So first and foremost, having those personal relationships is important. And really, and I'm sure Matt will touch on this, the projects we're seeing are heavy power users. And that, it kind of changes the game, where you you need the utility to be involved on the front end because there's an investment in infrastructure that may need to take place. And you probably need to make sure that the utility provider is open to making that investment on the front end, or else you're just going to get so far down the project. And then when you bring utilities in, they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. Not a conversation we normally have with utilities, but say the utility partner says, yeah, we're not going to do that. Well, you've just done, you've worked it all the way through the process to all of a sudden find out on the front end, you could ask the utility provider, hey, are you interested in X? And get a response. I think, you know, each utility company is built differently and they may have different bylaws or different rules of engagement or different processes that you have to kind of understand, because there's only so much that Wabash Valley can do. There's only so much AEP can do. There's only so much Duke Energy can do and NIPSCO. And so understanding the structure of each organization, I think, has its challenges, but also its advantages. So, Brian, you guys are all different. And so that it helps you and hurts you in different capacities. It's just like every city we travel to has pros and cons. There's no perfect city. There's no perfect place to put a company. You know, a site consultant, you know, when they're working a project, found this fascinating. They're never looking for the best place. It's always process of elimination, and it's who's sitting at the table last. And so I think being able to engage the utility provider early on in the process just gives us a better advantage. I would say it's staying at the table longer because you guys bring a wealth of knowledge. You guys invest back into the state doing the Indiana Power Partnerships, giving us money to do FAM tours or to help pay for some of the travel that we're doing. So you guys have become both a funding source and also an experience source for us from a sales perspective. So we try and align really closely to our utility providers just because of all of those reasons.
I think that's a really good way of putting it is, and I see with my counterparts at other utilities, the goal is always to support the local communities and be an advantage in the economic development process. And I think, you know, Matt touched on this earlier, that speed to market is kind of the new incentive entirely. And I think a lot of times the questions that are coming to the utilities are, can you serve it? How quickly can you serve it? What's it going to take? What's the cost going to be? Matt, maybe you can take us a little bit through that process of how you guys evaluate sites and how the different utilities and how they respond kind of helps or hurts different sites in the ability to kind of let those sites bubble to the top or let the cream kind of rise to the top, and what the role the utilities have in that site selection process.
I will kind of piggyback on what Brandon said about what consultants and even companies that don't use consultants look for may not be like the perfect site or the best site. At the end of the day, it's the least worst site, you know, managing risks. Which site is going to be the least risky for us? So that's what we're trying to find in general. And we're doing these when they're narrowing down sites and shortlisting sites, and we're helping them along the way and hoping that Indiana has what they need. But, you know, you both touched on it anymore, especially with some of these mega projects, but even the smaller ones, there's some component where the company wants to have, has some requirement with either the timing of their electric load, the infrastructure of the requirement, the use of it, or the rate. You know, one of those three is maybe not pain point is not the right word, but it is something they need to key in on. And if not, two or three of those. So oftentimes we'll see with our site search intake form, if they, you know, if a company doesn't already have a request for information that outlines this, we will always include, what is your anticipated electric use? What's your anticipated water, wastewater, gas, all that? Because we know that it's great if they need a 300-acre site and we're able to show them five of them. But if these five sites don't have the electric load they need within the time they need, then it's what's the point of even showing them? Obviously, you know, a lot of things go into how quickly an electric or utility can serve a site, as well as what the rate is going to be. We leave that to you guys, and that's why we want to bring you in early as possible, you know, when we do have those requirements. It's obviously easier on the front end if a company is receptive to that and knows what they need and can say, okay, I need a 300-acre site, but I need it served with, you know, X megawatts and whatnot, and need it done in this time frame. That's where we rely on our local partners to provide us sites, work with their local utility, and we present that to the company. They shortlist what they believe will work. And if they have that information, we're only as good as the information the company provides us, and we're only as as good as the information that the locals respond to for a proposal. So if these things match up and a company shortlists the site, you know, we've done our homework on the front end, that's really helpful to the project and really puts a site in better contention. And this is where I also plug in the Strategic Sites Initiative, the SSI program. We're working with a third-party contractor to identify some more of these, we'll call mega sites across the state that maybe aren't currently on the market. I think Brandon touched on this earlier. There's only so much land. There's only so many usable sites across the state or within a region. And one way to help us Indiana be more marketable is to identify these sites that not only are larger sites, and you know, because that's what everyone, not all these mega projects want, but larger sites that make sense from a utility perspective, from a land ownership perspective, from a speed to market perspective. So it's not going to be, you know, an easy process. Not going to be a short process, but I think it's going to pay off in the end.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with us today. It's kind of exciting having known you guys over the years. I mean, you're both kind of the favorite sons of your respective regions, and it's been fun to watch your careers and to see you guys not only bring the dedication and passion every single day to the job, but also to be successful in what you set out. So it's been a pleasure talking with you. And I think it's been a really valued partnership with both of you, both as individuals, but also with your respective organizations. So with that, you know, I'd say thank you for joining us today. I think you left us with a lot of really important and really useful information, but I'll bid you farewell and good luck in all your ventures. I know you guys are busting your butts out there on a daily. So I'll let you get back to it, but I appreciate you taking the time to meet with us.
Thanks, Brian. I think what I hope everyone hears from this is, as Matt has talked, and I'm talking as well, the proactive nature in which Indiana is operating. It takes partnerships like Wabash Valley and others alike for us to be able to do that, to be on the road, to be proactively trying to bring in investment to the region. So thanks for having us on here. Matt, thank you for everything that you do at the state level. Yeah, just appreciate all you guys.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. Appreciate the opportunity, Brian, and always good to talk with you, Brandon, as well.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I thought it was pretty insightful. I know it went a little bit longer than our usual conversation, but frankly, there was so much good stuff in here, it was really difficult to trim it down. Hope you guys tune in again. Next month, we'll be back with another podcast talking about some other great economic development topic. So for now, have happy holidays, have a safe time over the winter months, and we will talk to you guys again soon.